That was day one. I forgot all about the bar. I went straight back to my hotel and started calling half-forgotten numbers from my military police days. I needed somebody I knew and trusted, but I had been out for 6 years by then, and it was late on a Saturday night, so the odds were against me. In the end, I settled for somebody who claimed he had heard of me, which might or might not have made a difference to the eventual outcome. He was a warrant officer named Powell. "I need you to trace a civilian plate," I told him, "purely as a favor." He knew who I was, so he didn't give me any grief about not being able to do it for me. I gave him the details, told him I was pretty sure it was a private registration, not a livery car. He took my number and promised to call me back in the morning, which would be day two. He didn't call me back. He sold me out instead. I think in the circumstances, anybody would have. Day two was a Sunday, and I was up early. I had room service for breakfast and sat waiting for the call. I got a knock on the door instead, just after 10 o'clock. I put my eye to the peephole and saw two people standing close together so they would show up well in the lens. One man, one woman. Dark jackets, no overcoats. The man was carrying a briefcase. They both had some kind of official IDs held up high and tilted so they would catch the hallway light. "Federal agents," the man called, just loud enough for me to hear him through the door. In a situation like that, it doesn't work to pretend you're not in. I'd been the guys in the hallway often enough. One of them stays right there and the other goes down to get a manager with a pass key. So I just opened up and stood back to let them in. They were wary for a moment. They relaxed as soon as they saw I wasn't armed and didn't look like a maniac. They handed over their IDs and shuffled around politely while I deciphered them. At the top, they said, "United States Department of Justice." At the bottom, they said, "Drug Enforcement Administration." In the middle were all kinds of seals and signatures and watermarks. There were photographs and typed names. The man was listed as Stephen Elliott, 1L, like the old poet. April is the cruelest month. That was for damn sure. The photograph was a pretty good likeness. Stephen Elliott looked somewhere between 30 and 40, and was thick-set and dark and a little bald, and had a smile that looked friendly in the picture, and even better in person. The woman was listed as Susan Duffy. Susan Duffy was a little younger than Stephen Elliott. She was a little taller than him, too. She was pale and slender and attractive, and had changed her hair since her photograph was taken. "Go ahead," I said. "Search the room. It's a long time since I had anything worth hiding from you guys." I handed back their IDs, and they put them away in their inside pockets, and made sure they moved their jackets enough to let me see their weapons. They had them in neat shoulder rigs. I recognized the ribbed grip of a Glock 17 under Elliot's armpit. Duffy had a 19, which is the same thing, only a little smaller. It was snug against her right breast. She must have been left-handed. "We don't want to search the room," she said. "We want to talk about a license plate," Elliot said. "I don't own a car," I said. We were all still standing in a neat little triangle just inside the door. Elliot still had the briefcase in his hand. I was trying to figure out who was the boss. Maybe neither one of them. Maybe they were equals, and fairly senior. They were well-dressed, but looked tired. Maybe they had worked most of the night and flown in from somewhere. From Washington, D.C., maybe.
"Can we sit down?" Duffy asked.
"Sure," I said. But a cheap hotel room made that awkward. There was only one chair. It was shoved under a small desk crammed between a wall and the cabinet that held the television set. Duffy pulled it out and turned it around so it faced the bed. I sat on the bed, up near the pillows. Elliot perched on the foot of the bed and laid his briefcase down on it. He was still giving me the friendly smile, and I couldn't find anything phony about it. Duffy looked great on the chair. The seat height was exactly right for her. Her skirt was short, and she was wearing dark nylons that went light where her knees bent.
"You're Reacher, right?" Elliot asked.
I took my eyes off Duffy's legs and nodded. I felt I could count on them to know that
much. "This room is registered to somebody called Calhoun," Elliot said.
paid for with cash, one night only.
Habit, I said.
You leaving today?
I take it one day at a time.
Who's Calhoun?
John Quincy Adams, vice president. It seemed appropriate for this location. I used up the presidents long ago, now I'm doing vice presidents. Calhoun was unusual. He resigned to run for the Senate.
Did he get in?
I don't know.
Why the phony name?
Habit, I said again. Susan Duffy was looking straight at me. Not like I was nuts, like she was interested in me. She probably found it to be a valuable interrogation technique. Back when I interrogated people, I did the same thing. 90% of asking questions is about listening to answers.
We spoke to a military cop called Powell, she said. You asked him to trace a plate?
Her voice was low and warm and a little husky. I said nothing.
We have traps and flags in the computers against that plate, she said. Soon as Powell's inquiry hit the wires, we knew all about it. We called him and asked him what his interest was. He told us the interest came from you.
Reluctantly, I hope. She smiled.
He recovered fast enough to give us a phony phone number for you, so you needn't worry about old unit loyalties.
But in the end, he gave you the right number.
We threatened him.
Then MPs have changed since my day, I said.
It's important to us, Elliot said. He saw that. So now you're important to us, Duffy said.
I looked away. I've been around the block more times than I care to count, but the sound of her voice saying that still gave me a little thrill. I began to think maybe she was the boss, and a hell of an interrogator.
A member of the public calls in a plate, Elliot said. Why would he do that? Maybe he got in a fender bender with the car the plate was on. Maybe it was a hit and run. But wouldn't he go to the cops for that? And you just told us you don't have a car anyway. So maybe you saw somebody in the car? Duffy said.
She let the rest of it hang. It was a neat catch-22. If the person in the car was my friend, then I was probably her enemy. If the person in the car was my enemy, then she was ready to be my friend. You guys had breakfast? I asked.
Yes,
she said. So have I.
We know. Room service, a short stack of pancakes with an egg on top over easy, plus a large pot of coffee, black. It was ordered for 7:45 and delivered at 7:44, and you paid cash and tipped the waiter $3.
Did I enjoy it?
You ate it.
Elliot snapped the locks on his briefcase and lifted the lid. Pulled out a stack of paper, secured with a rubber band. The paper looked new, but the writing on it was blurred. Photocopies of faxes, probably made during the night.